On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew.
On the Commons with us today, we have a really dynamic professor, Frank Askin, from Rutgers University in New Jersey. Frank has been super, super busy with all kinds of amicus briefs, and he has been a staunch homeowner supporter, homeowner rights supporter. And we're going to talk a little bit to Frank today and find out what he's been up to in New Jersey. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Tell me, what's been going on in New Jersey? What have you been up to?
Well, it's, we keep fighting these issues. We won an important victory in the state Supreme Court last summer, a case called Mazderbrook Commons. Now, that just had to do with the right of a homeowner who was running for local freeholder to put signs on his windows and doors. They had a policy that you couldn't put any signs on the doors or windows. And we challenged that. We won that. I thought that was a fairly easy case. That was his own property. And now we have another case pending, which has to do with, canvassing your neighbors and giving out literature. It's a resident of a co-op in Fort Lee, New Jersey, who has been a constant critic of the board and wants to run for the board. And their policies say that he cannot talk to his neighbors. He cannot give out any kind of literature in the building. He could put notices on one small billboard at the back entrance to the parking lot, but that would be the limit of his campaigning. So he's a retired New York lawyer, and he did this pro se, and my clinic filed an amicus brief on behalf of the New Jersey ACLU in support of him. And the court granted certification, and now we're just waiting for a hearing date. The last days the court's going to hear any cases this term is the middle of May, and we don't have a date yet, so I don't know. I'm skeptical we'll get it heard this term. It may be that we're not going to get a hearing until fall.
Why is it that HOA seem to be targeting political free speech all the time? You had the same thing in Twin Rivers. You've got the Mazderbrook case, and now this case as well. What's the big deal with not allowing people to speak? I thought this was supposed to be this wonderful democratic society that we have, democracy up close and personal, but all they want to do is shut you up.
Yeah, interestingly, the Twin Rivers case was a setback in some ways. We lost that case on, they said the regulations were not unreasonable, but it was a strange opinion. And what I think the New Jersey Supreme Court was split 4-3. And I think what happened was the three dissenters, rather than follow a dissenting opinion, just appended their separate opinion to the end of the majority opinion, which made the whole case, the opinion, irreconcilable. It was totally contradictory. The first part of the opinion, if you read it from the beginning, it sounded like homeowners had no rights. If you read it from the back end, it says they have rights under both the Constitution and statutes. So it was really made no sense whatsoever. And in Mazderbrook, I think the court salvaged the situation by basically relying on the back end of the Twin Rivers opinion, ignoring the front end. So I'm fairly confident that the court now realizes, I think, that it made a mistake in some of the language in Twin Rivers, and I feel pretty optimistic about this new case coming up. But we'll see. This court, first of all, the court's in flux. The New Jersey Supreme Court is, there's a standoff between the governor and the state senate. There's only five real members of the court at the moment, and there are two appellate division judges who are sitting temporarily by appointment of the Chief Justice, while the state senate holds up two of Governor Christie's nominations. So it's very difficult to know who's going to be on the court when we finally get to argue these cases in the future, which direction the court may take. It's a court in motion and in progress. So it's hard to be absolutely sure which direction it will take. But I was encouraged by the Masterbrook opinion, which Chief Justice Ravner wrote a very strong opinion in favor of free speech in Masterbrook. So I'm sort of hopeful. Also, by the way, working with the Common Interest Homeowners Coalition, we have now submitted a formal proposal for a regulation governing elections in these common interest communities to the Department of Community Affairs. Department of Community Affairs has statutory jurisdiction over common interest communities, and they have authority to issue regulations, of which they very seldom have exercised that authority. We've been after them to issue rules and regulations. So far, we haven't been successful. So we've now formally proposed, about 2 weeks ago, a new election regulation to guarantee free and open elections in these communities. And the Department of Community Affairs will have to do something. This is done under the New Jersey Administrative Procedures Act. And if they just ignore us and refuse to do anything, we then have a right to challenge them in the courts to get them to issue a regulation because of their failure to do so in the past. So we'll see if we can make some progress along those lines. Of course, there's always bills in the legislature, but they don't seem to be going anywhere because of the power of the Community Associations Institute. They seem to block any, you know, progressive legislation along these lines. So we're turning to hopefully rulemaking in the courts to see if we can get some progress there, in addition to whatever litigation we do.
So the Common Interest Homeowners Coalition is still active?
Oh, yeah, they're active, yep. You know, still, they don't have any real resources. They're, you know, it's David versus the Goliath of CAI. but, you know, they try.
Yeah, I was sent an email today about another issue in Texas where CAI seems to argue in favor of the bullying and all the bad stuff that goes on because, oh heavens, we can't have any legislation regulating board members because then we won't have any board members. So you've got to allow them to bully and abuse their members.
Mm-hmm.
And that argument's got to stop at some point. Somebody's got to say, wait a minute, guys, that's just not going to go anywhere anymore.
Yeah, well, they got all the power, the CAI.
What about the legislators? Why is it that they don't seem to understand this?
I'm sorry, say that again?
What about the legislators? Why don't they seem to understand it?
Because the political clout's on the other side. You know, CAI actively lobbies. They make, you know, political contributions. They represent, all the management organizations and all the lawyers. You know, for the lawyers, this is a cottage industry. They represent the associations. They get, you know, big fees from it. There are no lawyers representing homeowners except for, you know, my clinic and the Appleseed Public Interest Law Center, which cooperates with us. But we're the only ones representing homeowners. All the lawyers, the money's on the other side. You know, the homeowners always face the same problem. If homeowners sues the association, unless they get free lawyers, they're paying for lawyers for both sides. They have to pay for their own lawyers, and then they pay their prorated share of the, you know, the lawyer's fees for the association. You know, we did Twin Rivers case. The association assessed their members $300,000 to pay their legal fees.
Each?
And our clients had to pay their prorated share of those fees, even though, you know, they were fighting the association. So it's a, you know, it's the homeowners are in an impossible situation. And, you know, there's only so much that we can do. We can put our finger in the dike every once in a while.
What kind of cases do you, does your constitutional litigation clinic handle? These are students. These are your law students, right?
Right. Yeah, I have a group of law students who work with me all the time on these cases. We've been focusing this, you know, we do a lot of different things. As far as community associations are concerned, we focus on free speech and fair elections. So we always have, you know, some kind of case going on in that area, plus trying to work to get, you know, work on regulations through the Department of Community Affairs. So, no, so I have, you know, at least I've been training some students over the years, and hopefully maybe one of these days they'll start representing some of these the homeowners against the associations, although, you know, it's always a problem where they're going to get who's going to pay them.
You started the clinic in 1970, right?
That's correct. I founded our constitutional litigation clinic in 1970. That's right.
And by the sounds of things, it's been an extremely successful model.
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, successful. We've created, you know, as we say here in our clinic, at other law schools, the students learn the law. At our law school, the students help make the law. And we've, you know, made a lot of law reform over the years. We've lost a lot of cases. We've probably lost as many cases as we won because we're always taking difficult cases. We're challenging the status quo, and that's always a problem. In the early years, I litigated mostly in the federal courts until they turned very conservative. And then maybe 20 years ago, I turned my attention basically to litigating in state courts under the New Jersey Constitution. And so I do most of my litigation now under the New Jersey Constitution. I mean, you know, we did the shopping mall cases in New Jersey. We made the New Jersey suburban shopping malls public forums under the state constitution. And then we took that law and tried to bring it into these common interest communities, because the New Jersey Constitution is not bound by some kind of state action requirement. New Jersey free speech provision operates not only against state actors, but also against certain private entities who control access to property, such as shopping malls, and now we say such as common interest communities. Most states don't follow that. Most states, you know, insist that these property, you know, homeowners associations are private property, not restricted by the state constitution. And that the only thing you can do there is hope that the legislature will provide some protections. In New Jersey, at least, we have a state constitution which the Supreme Court agrees does reach private associations such as common interest communities. So, you know, we've been very successful along those lines. Another, you know, state constitution case we're litigating at the moment has to do with voter registration. In New Jersey, in order to vote, you have to register 21 days in advance of an election. We're challenging that under the state constitution. We think that people should be able to register to vote on election day, that advance registration is an undue and no longer necessary burden on the right to vote because of modern technology. Everything's computerized. We have a statewide voter registration system, and we believe that advanced registration is no longer an acceptable burden on the right to vote. So that's another area where we're challenging under the, you know, the state constitution.
Frank, why is it? I mean, your model has been around for a long time, 43 years?
Say it again?
I said your model, your constitutional litigation clinic has been around for, what, 43 years now?
That's right, 43 years. That's correct.
Why is it that your model has not been cloned and adopted by other states and other law schools? It sounds like a perfect...
Well, few have tried to emulate us. In some states, they've actually run into trouble with the powers that be. Legislators, governors, they don't like public law schools challenging the powerful. And in some states, they've actually destroyed clinics like ours. Other states, they have do have some civil rights clinics in some states and some law schools, but they have not been so successful in getting their state courts to be responsive to them. We've been fortunate, generally speaking, have had a pretty progressive state Supreme Court in New Jersey. So we've been successful, and we've had the protection of the university to let us do what we want. Nobody interferes with the cases we handle. Over the years, the governors of New Jersey have not tried to interfere with what we do. They've generally protected us, again, in the name of academic freedom. So we've been fortunate in New Jersey. Other state law schools have not been so fortunate.
What you're telling me is that it's the state that is actually protecting you, and in other states don't want it. Is that pretty? Do I understand what you're saying correctly?
There's a lot of truth to that. We've been fortunate in New Jersey. In other states, as I say, in Maryland, the law school was attacked because they were challenging pollution by mega corporations. And same thing happened in Louisiana. The environmental clinics tried to go after pollution, and they were just dumped on by the state legislature. Their funding was cut off. Connecticut, some years ago, Connecticut Law School tried to set up a clinic like ours, and the governor cut the law school's funding unless they abandoned the clinic. So a lot of law schools have had trouble trying to emulate us. We've been fortunate in New Jersey. We have survived. Occasionally, attacks are made against us, but we've survived them. The university has always been supportive of us in New Jersey, and our state governors have generally been protective of us. We haven't had any challenges, really, in recent years. This was all maybe 15, 20 years ago, and we survived those attacks, and now everything is, we do as we want. It's academic freedom. We take cases that are useful for our students' education and which students are motivated to work on.
Well, I like what you said earlier, in that most law schools you learn the law, but at Rutgers you help make the law.
Right. That's our motto.
That's your motto.
Law school students learn the law. At Rutgers, the students help make the law.
I like that. I like that a lot because it really gets you involved in the whole process.
That's right. My most accomplishment I really like to brag about is the fact that I've helped train two new generations of public interest lawyers. I've sent a lot of my former students have gone on to become public interest lawyers, working for various ACLU or other public interest legal agencies.
How many of them have gone on to start something to protect the homeowners?
That we haven't really had much of yet. I'm hoping we've only been into this kind of common interest homeowner protection for about, I guess it's five, six years now, so our graduates are still, you know, fairly new. I'm hoping that sometime we'll get some of our graduates to take on some of these cases.
What are the odds of, and I'm talking in general across not just New Jersey, but what are the chances, do you think, of starting an organization somewhat like the Institute for Justice? Their focus is, you know, rights, again, constitutional rights, but they won't touch HOAs because they see them as private and private agreements. And I don't, you know, nobody agrees to the abuses that go on in HOAs. And I think that we've gone beyond accepting the fact that it is a private agreement, that it's, but what are the chances of having a bunch of lawyers start something like the Institute of Justice that is solely there to protect homeowners in associations?
I'm not sure I follow.
All right. My question was, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Institute of Justice, Institute for Justice. It's an organization based in Virginia, actually, and they take on cases across the country, constitutional cases, free speech, free education, you know, all sorts of, they represented Suzette Kilo in the eminent domain case, property rights, but only as far as the government's involved. They will not touch.
You know what? Let me take you off speaker and see if I can hear. Let me pick up the phone, see if it'll be any better. Hold on a second.
Okay. Now, say it again.
All right. Is that better?
Well, is that better? I can hear that. But when you start with long sentences, I sometimes have a little trouble. That's all.
All right. Are you familiar with the Institute for Justice?
What about justice?
Are you familiar with the Institute for Justice?
Institute for Justice. You talk about the conservative group?
Yes.
Well, I've heard of them. I don't know much about them.
Okay. Well, they take on cases. It's a bunch of attorneys, and they take on these cases that don't cost the home or their clients anything. For instance, they defended Suzette Kilo in the eminent domain case. Do you think that that's a model that might...
Say that again.
Do you think that that would be a model that would work for HOA cases?
Well, you know, there are a lot of, you know, there are lots of public interest legal agencies. There are some are sort of, you know, progressive to support human rights and individual rights. But there's also these right-wing so-called public interest offices, which basically, you know, support the powerful against the powerless. You know, some of them, the conservative groups are not going to protect the individual against corporations or big money. They do the opposite. You have to look to the groups like the ACLU, the Center for Constitutional Rights, the Appleseed Public Interest Centers, which exist in a number of states. We have one in New Jersey. And other independent public interest agencies. Some are, you know, protect their environmental groups, hope consumer groups, that, you know, represent individuals against the corporate power. So there are, as I say, but the Institute for Justice, as I understand it, is a right-wing group which is not going to support individuals against corporate power.
Well, actually, they support individuals against government power.
It depends. They do it, they may be supporting individuals, say, for the right to bear arms against government power. But these are conservative causes. Or they support, individuals against affirmative action. In other words, they'll defend white folk who claim they're being discriminated against because of affirmative action programs. But these are the right-wing groups. So there are two different models as to, you know, so sure, to call them a public interest legal agency, you got to know what their program is, what kind of programs they're supporting.
Well, they're supporting, they defend and represent individuals against government abuses. Their sole thing is government, like the ACLU is the First Amendment. That's the one thing that their focus is on. The Institute for Justice is against the government, and they've represented Suzette Kilo, who was not, you know, she was not a big person. They've represented, there was a case here where a young woman had a pet grooming business that she ran in Virginia, and they represented her. They represented, taxi drivers, homeschooling, you know, those kinds of things. So they're always the individuals against the government. And I, you know, I don't have a problem with anybody saying, like the ACLU saying, we're going to work solely to protect First Amendment rights, or the Institute for Justice saying, we're just going to protect you from government abuses. Would there be, can you foresee a time when we might end up with a similar organization, and I'm leaving politics aside, a similar organization that exists with the sole purpose of protecting individuals against their homeowners associations or their condominiums?
Well, I don't think the right-wing groups are going to do that.
I don't, it doesn't matter.
The ACLU may do it in certain states. The right-wing groups aren't going to do that. They're going to be like the CAI. They're going to protect against government interference with the associations and the management companies running their communities the way they want to.
I'm not looking, I'm not worried about their political, you know, one way, it doesn't matter to me. It's not the political leanings of whether they're conservative or liberal. I'm just wondering if the model would work, if you think that model would work, where you would have...
The model works. We have that model. The model's all over the place in groups like the ACLU or Appleseed or Center for Constitutional Rights. The question is, what's their program? Who are they protecting against government abuse? What's their theory of government abuse? For some groups, government abuse is when the government tries to keep you from having an AK-47. That's what they think is government abuse. It's not what I think is government abuse. So the question is, what's their basic program? What do they mean by government abuse? I mean, certain libertarian groups, they may support certain individual rights, but they, you know, they also may say they want to prevent government from protecting the right of women to have free choice. So the question is, what is their concept of government abuse? So fine, if they really want to protect individuals against government power and the power of homeowners associations, fine. If that's what they want to do, it's good. And there are some groups that are doing that.
I'm wondering, I guess with your clinic, your litigation clinic, I'm wondering if anybody in your group, any of your budding attorneys might be interested in thinking in terms of starting something on a national level with that kind of a model. Not necessarily just keeping it in one state, but a national organization that would solely, with the focus of protecting the individual from the association. Is that something that you think might happen? Would somebody be interested in doing that?
No.
I mean, it already exists. The ACLU exists. That's what the ACLU does. In some states, the ACLU, in New Jersey, the ACLU supports our work to protect homeowners. We don't have money to litigate these cases. I need a sponsor for my cases. When I litigate a case against a homeowners association, the ACLU is my sponsor. They pay all the costs of the litigation. In other states, the ACLU may do the same thing. The problem is most states view these associations as private property.
Right.
And the ACLU doesn't think they have a chance of winning these cases in
right.
other states.
Right.
I talk to my colleagues all the time in the ACLU and encourage them to try to take on these kinds of cases. California has made some attempt to do it, but lately they have not been successful.
I talked to the people here in Virginia, and the only cases they would take were the First Amendment and against the real government, because they did not see HOAs as, again, they just felt that that was private. Because I was a member of the ACLU. I did a lot of fundraising with them over here in Virginia.
I'm sorry, in Virginia?
Yeah, in Virginia. They would not touch HOA cases at all.
No, I know they won't, because they figure they can't win them. If they thought they could win them, they would take them. The problem is the Virginia Constitution gives them no support. So they figure it's an exercise in futility. I don't know what you want them to do. They'd be happy to take these cases. They take all kind of First Amendment cases. The problem is these are not First Amendment cases.
That's right.
They are state constitution cases. And their state constitution doesn't permit it, like we do in New Jersey.
So it's a state problem.
The ACLU in New Jersey, other states are very jealous of what we do in New Jersey.
So it's a state problem.
It's a state problem, that's right.
So if it's a state problem, then what's the answer, Frank?
Well, the answer is maybe, trying to change the state constitution take some test cases and maybe try to make some progress. As I say, they tried it in California without much success. I'm not sure what's going on in other states with ACLU, but generally speaking, they figure they can't win these cases. They're just spinning their wheels, and it's an exercise in futility.
That's too bad.
I mean, the answer is to get appointments to the state Supreme Courts far-reaching and far-seeing legal people who will, change the interpretation of the state constitution.
Wow, that's sounds like a daunting job.
Right. Yeah.
So let's get back to Mazdabrook. Wasim Khan, who was the homeowner in this case, the condo owner, right?
Oh, the new case?
No, the Mazdabrook.
Mazdabrook case.
Mazdabrook.
Yeah.
He won his case, right?
Right. Yeah, he could put his sign on his door and his window.
And did he win the election?
No, I don't think he won the election.
That's,
he was a Democrat running in a Republican area.
That's too bad, because there have been cases where condos have told candidates that they were not allowed to post their signs.
Mm-hmm.
And the candidates won, and especially in Maryland, I don't remember her name, but the first thing she did was sponsored legislation that would permit candidates to post signs or to post political signs in condos, notwithstanding what the governing documents have to say about it.
Yeah, Maryland's a good state. Maryland, they can do that. Maryland's a pretty progressive state.
They've Evan McKenzie was there just a few weeks ago. He was testifying about a bill they have. And I don't know where that bill's going. But they're trying to do some new stuff there as well.
In Illinois?
In Maryland.
Oh, in Maryland, right.
Yeah.
Well, Maryland's a very progressive state. They got a progressive governor. If the legislature would pass something, the governor would certainly sign it. You know, Senator Jamie Raskin in Maryland is a real proponent of these kinds of proposals. I don't know if Jamie has supported anything along these lines.
I don't know. I haven't really been paying a whole lot of attention to what's going on in Maryland lately, but I'll have to do a little more digging in there and find out.
Mm-hmm.
But what else has been going on in New Jersey? You've got this new case that you're going to be coming in. What did you say, the pro se?
Oh, the new case?
Yes.
Yeah, his name is Dublerer.
Dublerer?
Yeah, Dublerer, Dublerer. And, he's the condo case in Fort Lee.
And he wants to run for his own condominium board.
Right, he wants to run for the board, right.
And they're not letting him do that. Or they're not letting him campaign.
I'm sorry, what?
They're not letting him campaign.
Well, that's what they said, but, as a matter of fact, we won in the appellate division, and you raise a good question. I'm not sure whether he's now, I don't know that opinion has been stayed. It may be that he's now allowed to do it unless until the Supreme Court overturns it, because he did win in the appellate division, and we're trying to protect that victory in the state Supreme Court, and I don't know what's happened to him in the meantime. Maybe he did. Maybe he has been campaigning in the building as a result of the appellate division opinion.
So what happens when these cases happen? You've got the courts say that you cannot stop him from campaigning.
Right.
Does that necessarily... It should allow everybody to be able to campaign in their respective associations.
Right.
Is there some way of enforcing that?
Well, sure. I mean, after Mazdabrook, I assume all the association lawyers have now explained to their clients that they can no longer prevent homeowners from putting signs in their on their doors and windows, political signs. I'm sure that's now accepted. Nobody's going to challenge that. So I assume that's now going on. Anybody wants to put in New Jersey? Anybody wants to put a political sign on their door or window is allowed to do so in these associations. The one thing the CAI does do is, that they at least help to enforce, the uniformity throughout the associations, because the lawyers all get their marching orders from the CAI. And the CAI now tells them, after Mazdabrook, you've got to allow signs on doors and windows.
Are they telling them that?
Oh, sure.
You talked a little bit at the beginning of the show as well about coming up with something to do with elections in associations. You're going to be working with the Common Interest Housing Homeowner Coalition.
Yeah, the proposal we're now making to New Jersey.
Yes, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we submitted a regulation which we're asking the Department of Community Affairs to adopt, which would allow for free and open elections in all the common interest communities. It has about 12 different provisions dealing with nominations and campaigning and who counts the ballots, guaranteeing an independent a review, counting of the ballots, and open counting, so everybody can know that nobody's stuffing the ballot box. There has to be an independent committee appointed to take care of the ballots and open them all at one time. And so it's a lengthy rule,
and we're asking the Department of Community Affairs to adopt it. Now, if they refuse to accept what we're doing, we can go to court under the Administrative Procedure Act and ask the court to compel them to do something. They don't necessarily have to adopt the precise rule we propose, but we would ask the court they should adopt some rule guaranteeing free and fair elections. So anyway, that's now in process. I'm sure it'll take us at least a year to work our way through this.
Wow, that long, huh?
Oh, at least, yeah. They have 60 days now to respond to our first proposal. That's the first thing that happens. We submitted this about 2 weeks ago, and they have 60 days to say something. Either they will hold a hearing on it or they are not interested in it, and then we can take further steps.
I know that elections are a problem across the country because, you know, boards don't particularly want open elections, but is it something you hear a lot, get a lot of complaints about from people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we get a lot of complaints about it. The complaints we get are about elections and about access to governing documents. We've also been working with the Department of Community Affairs to try to get them to promulgate a rule enforcing the right of access to documents.
People are not allowed to go in and examine the books and records there?
Well, they give it a hard time. They're supposed to have a right to access these documents, and various associations give people a hard time. Department of Community Affairs will sometimes chastise the associations for refusing to allow documents, but they're pretty weak in enforcement. They have the power to enforce it, but they don't do very much, unfortunately. And they don't have the manpower part, really, to enforce it.
How long has the Community Affairs been able to enforce these things? I mean, is this similar to some states have an ombudsman? Is it a similar program?
No, there's no ombudsman in New Jersey. There is the Department of Community Affairs, and there were 1992 amendments to the basic statute which provided these rights to members of associations. DCA is supposed to be enforcing these provisions, but they've done very little to enforce it. They seem to listen more to the, I think, Community Associations Institute than they listen to anybody else.
Who's on? Does that not surprise me?
Yeah.
Who's in the Department of Community Affairs?
Well, they're appointees of the governor.
Okay. And I suppose the governor stands in the middle of the street and just handpicks people as they walk past, right?
As far as I know.
And, yeah.
Yeah, the governor has not been big on allowing his agencies to promulgate rules. That's one of the problems we face. He has not he's not encouraged agencies to promulgate rules in order to effectuate the law.
But this department's existed for a number of years, right?
Well, it's been particularly, I think, true under Governor Christie. I don't think it was so true before Christie, but DCA, even under Democratic governors, DCA has been slow to do anything. Other agencies have been much more active in promulgating rules.
And, okay, so you think that this is going to take a year to come up with some kind of rule? So how long do they have? Is there a set limit, time limit, for how long they have to respond to your request?
Yeah, they have, at the outset, they have 60 days to do something.
Okay.
And then after that, if they do nothing, there's another period that kicks in. We file a complaint with Department of Administrative Agency overseeing department, and they can do something, so it'll take a little while.
What do you think the odds are that you'll be able to get something through?
I'm sorry, say it again.
What are the odds that you'll be able to get something?
Oh, I don't know. We advocate. We can't make those decisions.
You can't prognosticate.
We do what we can on our end, but we don't have the final say so.
No, I understand that, but it's got to be frustrating. Is your clinic involved in this, or is this something that you're doing with the Common Interest Homeowner Coalition?
No, it's all the clinic. My clinic represents the Common Interest Homeowners Coalition.
So the clinic is still involved with this?
Oh, sure.
And they're writing the proposal?
Yeah, right.
So they're really getting into the nitty-gritty and doing the research and figuring out what the problems and issues are.
Oh, that's right. That's what my students do.
So they're getting a very good, strong background and a good understanding.
Yeah, that's what they're here for.
That's what they're here for. How long do they stay in the clinic? How long is the clinic?
Well, they have to enroll each semester. Most of our students stay for a full year. Some stay for 2 years. They start off in the second year. They're second year's law students. Some stay through their third year. Some may only stay for one semester, but it's between 1 and 4 semesters they're in the clinic.
And so you're getting a constant turnover.
Yeah, there's a pretty constant turnover, sure.
What happens when you get someone... Do they stay with the case? You know, for instance, I know they were involved in Twin Rivers. Did you end up with the same students at the end of Twin Rivers as you did at the beginning?
Oh, no. Twin Rivers lasted about 6 years. So we had a constant turnover of students. During the first couple weeks of a semester, they have to... You know, bone up on the background of a case and then jump into it. That's what lawyers have to learn to do. They can come in the middle of a case. They have to catch up and then move it forward.
And do they have a background in real estate law?
They get their background here.
So this is all a brand new learning experience for them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they're doing a tremendous job.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's what we do. That's what I've been doing for 40-some years.
Yeah, that's incredible. You said you had about 12 provisions in this.
The
proposal, yes.
Yeah. Right.
Can you run through? I know you talked about the right to run and access to free records.
Well, hold on. Let me pull out. I'll pull out the rule. Oh.
Okay.
Let me see. Where are we here? It's in my file here. Let me see what I have. Okay, let's see. Here is the rule. It starts out, scope. It says, the purpose of this regulation is to ensure that elections must be fair and open processes designed to foster equal opportunity for all owners to vote as well as compete for and be elected to board positions. Then... Section 1 is called definitions. Section 2 is eligibility to participate in elections. Section 3 is election supervision. Section 4 is notice of elections. Section 5 is nominations. Section 6 is ballot format and substance.
Wow.
Section 7 is ballot voting process. Section 8 is called tallying votes. Section 9 is absentee ballots and proxy voting. Section 10 is called privacy and disabled voter. Section 11 is called announcing election results. Section 12 is called runoff elections. Section 13 is called amendments to process. And Section 14 is called preservation of records. Notice of elections, notice of candidacy for elections, information sheets, voting envelopes, ballots, sign-in sheets, and all other papers related to voting shall be maintained as part of the official records of the association for a period of 1 year.
Wow, that sounds pretty thorough.
Yeah, it's a pretty all-encompassing rule. We'd like to see them adopted.
Eligibility. Who do you think would be ineligible to run? I would think that somebody who's not seriously behind in their dues, but otherwise, is anybody else ineligible?
We actually have a provision in there that talks about good standing. And it says everyone has a right to vote unless they are clearly in arrears of their assessments. But if the assessment is in dispute, they have a right to vote until they get ADR completed. In other words, even if they're allegedly in arrears, they have a right to ask for ADR if they dispute the assessment, and they can vote until the ADR is completed and they are found to really be in arrears. So we've even taken care of that situation.
So, okay, so this would be for voting, but what about eligibility as a candidate to run?
No, same thing.
Same thing?
Yep.
Okay. What about fines?
This does not talk about fines.
Because what's happened in the past that I've heard of is managers who decide they don't want a particular homeowner on the board have fined them so that they owe money and are ineligible to run.
That would not be ineligible. For example, if they were fined for violation of another rule,
yeah.
No, they'd be eligible to vote under our rule.
Okay, so that's covered in there.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with getting that through. I think it's a terrific model. I hope that when you've got it through, that you will share it with the rest. I mean, a lot of states are trying to get something going because voting has been a big problem.
Uh-huh. No, absolutely.
You know what's going on in Las Vegas, right?
Las Vegas?
Yeah, they've actually got the FBI in there because of their voting frauds.
No, I'm not sure. I don't know about Las Vegas.
Oh, they've got a huge thing going on over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the FBI's been involved for years. All kinds of voting fraud and all kinds of neat stuff there. But Senator Mike Schneider says that Nevada is allowed to get involved because they changed the Constitution and call HOAs quasi-governmental entities.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that legally changes things or not, but he seems to think it does.
Well, I wish him well.
Yeah, interesting. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today.
Always my pleasure.
And good luck with getting the regulations passed.
Okay, thank you.
And good luck with your other case, the one that's going to the Supreme Court. I think that's great.
Okay, I'll let you know what happens.
Please do.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect. All my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet. The writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.